Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello, happy new year!
Hello, hello, happy new year. Where did you ring in your new year, Winter Mitchell?
In the boo, Malibu, yeah.
Get it, you're connected.
I said.
We've also got journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
What up, Guy?
What up, Margaret? What about you? Where did you say hello to 2018?
At a Chinese restaurant, and then also in my bed.
Amazing.
I was asleep by 10 p.m. Amazing. Because I'm cool like that.
That's reasonable. Somebody depends on you for their protein.
Exactly.
It takes it out of you.
And I've lived through a few of them now, so whatever.
I know. It's hard getting to our age. And pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
And why don't you tell those Rocketeers where you said hello to 2018?
Palm Springs, California, which, as Winter was just reminding us, has been rescued by the homosexuals of Southern California.
That's what it says when you drive through.
Exactly. There are rainbow greetings everywhere.
Coming up on this week's show, award season is upon us, so we're going to be talking about award shows. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
I can count on one hand the number of times I've watched a parade on television. Mm-hmm. I don't really get the point of why people do this, but I know it is a time-honored tradition. But I did tune in to Cord and Tish's narration of the 2018 Rose Parade, and it was delightful.
It was amazing.
Cord and Tish basically are Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon playing two, like, hackneyed TV journalists who have been covering the Rose Bowl for 25 years now. And what happens is that the two of them just sat there behind a big garland of roses and said terrible, tacky, awkward things about all the floats going by, yeah, as well as awkward, terrible things to each other. Some of my favorite moments was like when the policemen on horses went by. Cord, who is Will Ferrell, started to talk about animals and his fear of horses. And that was a recurring motif throughout the show. But then also he dropped this line that was, is there any greater relationship than between a man and his animal? Interesting subtext. It was just so delightful and unhinged. And one of the other great things about it was that they had Tim Meadows on the ground as their correspondent. And, you know, at one point they turned to Tim Meadows and they're like, what do you hope for 2018? And he just says, just completely deadpan, he looks at the camera and says, well, I'm just going to watch the world fall apart as it's been doing for the last year. And, I mean, the best part of this, too, is that so many people tuned in and apparently had no idea that this was Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon. Because, I mean,
I saw the ads, actually, and I didn't recognize
them. It caught me off guard, the billboard.
Okay, so, yeah, Molly Shannon looked like Molly Shannon, but Will Ferrell is bald because he's got a cap on and has a beard.
It was a red beard.
Are they based on, like, the perennial hosts, Bob Eubanks and Stephanie Edwards from the local channels of Kate?
Very much that.
Because that was like my whole childhood and even some of my younger adulthood was spent waking up kind of hungover in my later adulthood, of course.
Yes.
And then seeing Bob and Stephanie do these kind of really terrible, kitschy things.
Yes.
Like, look at that prance and gait.
Margaret, did you watch it on broadcast television live or did you watch it through Amazon?
I was actually at a friend's party on New Year's Day and they had it just looping on their TV constantly. And I was like, what is this? Because I didn't know what it was at first. I just heard the talk over the TV and I didn't even see who it was. And I was like, this is hilarious and strange. And then I tuned in on my own. You can stream it from Amazon. Probably.
Yeah, I watched it afterwards on Amazon as well. And it's just exciting to have somebody be taking a new approach to a live television trope like that. Like, we have so much fucking scripted television these days. It's nice to have somebody take a swing at one of the other things and, like, bring something like that into the 21st century and give it new life. Well, it was so much fun.
It was much better than Anderson and Andy Cohen.
Oh,
which was just
that was
a travesty of.
I didn't watch. What was it? What was the vibe?
The vibe is, Andy at one point turns to Anderson and is like, are you sick of me? Are you? And not in that fun way where it's just like kind of keeping the energy going. He's like, I feel like you're tired of me. Like you're over me. And Anderson is like, no. It was the most awkward moment.
It's hard to perform power gay. Like the thrills of being a power gay couple.
But it was literally like watching a gay couple on a very like posh and rich gay couple argue on a corner.
I mean, the great thing about Kathy Griffin is
that literally
she was always, I mean, back during the days that Anderson Cooper was still officially closeted.
Yeah.
It was like his homosexuality came out for one night.
Her.
But the thing is she was always like tugging at him and prodding at him
yes.
and getting new stuff out of him where I feel like, and I would think Andy thought
it was his show with Anderson participating.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me because like.
But he has no skill.
He has no skill except for a complete willingness to talk about anything.
Right.
Which works on Watch What Happens Live, but it's not like he's funny or interesting on his own.
Why is Anderson the guy that hosts that?
Because before Don Lemon, he was the gayest thing on on CNN, and we are the official sexuality of Celebration.
Yes. and Don Lemon and Brooke Baldwin in New Orleans were the highlight of the evening. They went on a step line with a Louisiana band. They went to bars. They got drunk. They had some poor woman. I'm sure she's like the White House correspondent, like in the morning, but she was literally in Denver. At a weed, wine and weed. So they painted and drank wine and smoked weed and painted. And then they showed Anderson and
like
Andy. It was hilarious. It was hilarious once you took them out
involved.
Of the equation.
The thing is, I think if you have Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, for there to be compelling conversation, they need to be discussing whether a 24-year-old graduate student at NYU will have a four-way with them.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
I want more of that.
It's
actually
really
would have been
hard to bring that to the surface.
Honest. Forget the ball dropping. Don't care.
Don't you think that Kathy was at home just cackling and drinking a martini and being like, duh.
She was probably at Adam Lambert's New Year's Eve party, which I hear a lot of people went to.
Yeah.
Like, as time goes on, I feel like she is bit by bit being vindicated for how much we
I think
came
they're
going to
probably bring her back. I mean, it was such a flop.
They can't bring Andy back again.
They can't bring Andy
back. I don't
back,
even think so, Anderson will come back.
The thing is, Kathy, like, it's wonderful to hear stand-ups who are around in the 90s talk about Kathy Griffin because they all will tell you how bad she was for so long. But she's a fucking survivor.
She sure is.
Who has had so many low times before. I think she like Joan Rivers before her, will manage to come back in a new shape.
But it was really fun to watch karma policing itself in real time. It was hard to watch.
Like, they were like James Franco and Anne Hathaway all over again.
That's so funny.
Well, it's also that thing of like, I don't need your mask on mask. There needs to be like somebody being a girlfriend.
Right.
Winter, what are you all about this week?
Black Mirror. Holy shit. I made sure to watch it before the year started because I just didn't want that energy coming into 2018, but it doesn't matter. It creeps everywhere. It's like a sewage leak in your brain. This season, they really had some, I think, triumphant efforts. All the leads of every episode were female. Jodie Foster directed Archangel, which is a crazy, super uber sadistic episode that's about a woman who puts a chip inside of her daughter's head when she's young because she has a scare. She runs off and she gets frightened, so she starts surveilling her all the way up until she's a teenager. And basically the lack of letting a child grow and experience life without being constantly monitored, it basically turns the other way. So Jodie Foster said that she directed it because it was similar to how she felt her life was. Her mother was super aggressive and oppressive and a helicopter mom and trying to find an identity out of that and spin an identity out of being a child star, but also developing and obviously going through what she was dealing with her sexuality. She felt like the influence of the relationship between her and her mother was very similar to the episode she directed. Archangel, obviously, was my favorite. USS Callister was great with fake Matt Damon, or Meth Damon, as he's called. Jesse Plemons, who's great in it. And then Metalhead, which is about a post-apocalyptic one. That's apocalyptic. I don't
Hang
like
the DJ
like
was the one with the Tindery thing, right?
Yes.
It felt a little watered down San Jacinto to me.
Yes. It did. And I felt like
San Junipero. Yeah.
It was definitely going down that road, but I loved it because it honestly felt like my relationship. So like I was sort of bopping around. And this person was stuck in a relationship that was like dead end.
Well, also it uses a structure for like in integrating technology into rom-com structure
mm-hmm.
in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where things were going to go.
Yeah.
Like I thought maybe... And it was really smart. I do feel like I read an article that was basically like Charlie Booker, whatever his name is,
mm-hmm.
sort of keeps exploring the same technologies in different ways.
Yeah.
Like capturing someone's identity
mm-hmm.
is really what USS whatever is
mm-hmm,
about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Archangel is so similar to the one, the Christmas episode
mm-hmm.
where like you were able to like block people out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... I enjoyed them, but I would sort of like more heads in the game. Karen Tongson, what are you all about this week?
Guys, I am totally throwing back because I've spent my time thus far in the holidays catching up with things that I never finished.
Right.
Particularly shows I never finished. And
that's so responsible.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's just the scholarly aspect of myself.
Very completist.
I'm a completist.
Yes.
So I finally jumped back into Downton Abbey.
Oh, my God.
And I know that it ended in 2015, but, you know, whatever. It takes 3 years sometimes. And so I watched the last two and a half seasons, which I hadn't seen at all. And I have a few takeaways. I basically mainlined it with my friend JJ, who's in from out of town. One takeaway is that Bit and Anna are really fucking annoying. I'm just like,
so annoying.
How much drama do you have to frickin' endure? So at a certain point during the Bit and Anna plotline, my friend and I just began crying, Bit, baby Bit, oh no, what's going to happen to baby Bit? And it became a kind of sticking point. We basically spoke entirely in that accent all week. It's like,
good.
Or Daisy will bring us some guacamole near the hot tub. And so the other takeaway is that
it should have ended 2 seasons ago.
Yes. Well, one of the things was just that at some point, like, they basically gave up, right?
Yeah.
They basically just decided this is going to furnish a happy ending because we all know what's on the horizon. It's a thing called World War II.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, they cut it off in 1925. Essentially, spoiler alert, everybody gets a partner. Everybody gets an upgrade in their title. The two most moving aspects of the final seasons for me were Isis the dog's death. Because
oh, yeah.
The Isis is that, you know, I like sobbed.
Beautiful pup.
I was like, oh God, Isis is dying. Okay. And actually, Carson and Mrs. Hughes, even though because you know what? It's like, I've been waiting for that ending since Remains of the Day frustrated
yeah.
me
exactly.
many years ago. So I was just like, okay, that's cool. I mean, and frankly, I wasn't mad. It, you know, their last, they usually do Christmas episodes where everything happy happens. And it was apropos for me to be watching it right around this week because the final episode really takes place over the New Year's holiday, New Year's Eve. And then that's when, you know, everybody's married. Everybody's stoked. Lady Mary has slutted around even more. And, you know, yet she ends up with
a car dealer.
I know. With a sexy car dealer who ends up on the crown and married to Princess Margaret. So,
oh,
yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, so he's, you know,
he's
I'm just like, well, he ends up on the crown. So, but anyway, I think if you haven't finished it, it will be deeply gratifying. I haven't spoiled too much for people here.
But
that is an interesting...
Right? But people get so mad.
People get so mad. It's insane.
That is an interesting reflection of the short season thing that is happening with streaming now that Britain has always had,
yeah.
where you have these people who get plucked up from
yeah,
one series
yeah.
and then placed in a very similar role in another series in the way that the woman who was Anne Boleyn on The Tudors, they were like, well, we'll have her be Marjorie Tyrell
yeah,
on
Game
of Thrones
yeah.
because it's essentially the same thing. And having that dude show up as Earl Snowden
yeah.
on The Crown, let everybody know, like, oh, we know exactly who this guy is when he shows up.
They know what they're doing over there. We shouldn't mess with their formula.
Yeah.
yeah.
And now I'll have to watch Godless to see what Michelle Dockery is up to.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
Heard that's good.
This week, I am all about fighting with people on Facebook and elsewhere
Yay!
About Call Me By Your Name. specifically, I forgot to look the author's name up, but a bunch of people have been posting the New Yorker review of Call Me By Your Name, where a dude calls it like sanitized sort of contentless romance. I believe the author of the article was Richard Brody. And calling a movie where a dude comes in a peach, like, sanitized is surprising to me. But it's more just, like, my bigger problem is a lot of straight people stroking their collective beards and wandering in and saying, do we really approve of the age difference in this movie? And always by saying, like, if Timothée Chalamet were a girl, how would we feel about this? And the fact that no one ever says...
Meanwhile, Lolita looms large.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But also the fact that we never say, what if Armie Hammer were a woman? Because that would just be, like, every movie about sexual conquest that we ever made where, like, a teenager manages to get stabbed at the hot, sexy lady. And
like that whole James Woods Twitter debacle. Right.
And the thing is like, I do understand that it is like it's playing a complex game with that relationship. It definitely wants you to ask questions about like maturity levels and all of that. But I guess I'm just annoyed by straight people always having to ask, well, how would this work for us without in any way looking into the other differences that exist between them and us. And then I guess the bigger problem in conversation, Winter and I have seen Call Me By Your Name. Margaret and Karen have not. I don't know that I can go another 2 weeks without Karen Tonkson having an opinion about Call Me By Your
Name.
You
gotta really get
somebody
into it.
Somebody give me your freaking screener already.
Goddamn wheelhouse.
I will say this, like, I did one of those things where I was like, I always get nervous because I want it. It's not because, it's because I don't understand specifically because I'm not gay.
Yeah.
So I don't, like, I know what it's like as a straight person, and basically the law gets involved. Yeah. But when I looked at this movie, the way it was shot, the way it was written, the intelligence of the character Elio, the dynamic within the family, the fact that the father and the mother were aware and supportive and caring, and then obviously the ending, I just felt like it's a perfect movie that really just kind of just says it. Like, this is what was happening.
He's 17. It's not like there is
the
law issue.
But 17.
Yes. But the thing that I think is most interesting for me about it is trying to wrap my head around the way that straight people watch this movie. Margaret.
Well, I was just going to ask, just have straight people brought up that we usually prefer coming in citrus fruits?
Girls Trip will tell
Margaret,
us that.
That feels like it would hurt.
Well, we learned about the pineapple, though.
Grapefruit, yes.
Or the grapefruit.
Grapefruit.
I just want to say, as the person here who has been a 14-year-old boy, melons on a farm. melons are the way to go.
I mean, this is obvious.
But like, I think what's interesting to me is a lot of the New Yorker review really chafed at the lack of external conflict that was being imposed. And
they were also in another country.
Trying to understand the way that straight people are understanding the two leads, sort of like processing of themselves and coding of their relationship and like inclinations against expression of homosexuality. Like, I don't know how much you guys have thought about that.
Well, I think too that what you're talking about is the tendency we have in this era to read all movies or works of art moralistically first.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a real burden and gets in the way of just taking in the emotional honesty of a piece of work. Like, we don't have to morally agree with it to get something out of it.
And also, I want to be clear, my criticism is not just of straight people's takes on it. When I showed up to Gay Party in West Hollywood for New Year's Eve, I was like, all right, I'm ready to fight with some people about Call Me By Your Name. And they provided. They showed up, and a friend of mine who I did not expect yet came hard for Lady Bird, and I was not, I felt blindsided. All right, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back to talk about award shows after this. You guys can spend less time planning your next trip and more time relaxing with Tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals. With Tripping.com, OneSearch lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. Don't wonder if you are getting the best deal. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation with Tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, head over to Tripping.com/rocket today. That's TRIPPING.com/rocket, like pop rocket. Winner, where would you go if you were going on a vacation today?
I want to go to Iceland.
Margaret?
India.
Karen?
Frack, I don't know. Croatia. The Dalmatian coach. The Dalmatian
coach. I was like, where's Frack?
In Croatia.
Karen and I would be sailing up the Dalmatian coast.
Yes.
All right.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson.
Do you guys love award season or no?
Don't I ever.
I used to really be exuberant about Globes and Oscars season. I mean, I had less love for the Grammys, and the Emmys, sometimes it's just sort of like, oh, the Emmys are on, right?
I feel like way about the Tonys.
It's off season. It's like winter baseball.
Yeah, and I also used to get very excited about the Tonys, but I really stopped following at a certain point. I've lost my gay card for that. But, I mean, I just feel that, I think that the calendar has been truncated over the course of time.
It totally
right?
has.
And so I feel like without that spacing, I don't have the same level of anticipation.
What a beautiful point. Young people, you don't remember this, but when we were all young, the Academy Awards happened in April. Passover season, essentially.
Yeah.
So you had four long months.
Oh, my God. That's
yes.
right.
Yeah. People would go.
And then up to March and April, right?
Yes. People would go on talk shows to promote their movie. Mm-hmm. Then they would come back in Globe season, which has always happened at the end of January, and then they would go do the Tonight Show again before the Academy Awards to keep campaigning. And that is what I want.
You know, the whole season is basically 2 months long, right? Because
yep.
Golden Globes is the 7th or something like that of January, and then the Oscars is going to be March
yes.
7th, something like that. It all feels to me like Christmas, where it just feels like it keeps rolling earlier and earlier
uh-huh.
and keeps coming at me whether I want it to or not. So I just roll over and obey at this point.
Are you going to watch the SAG Awards? Like, how deep do you go?
I actually think I might this year because of their choice to choose all women presenters.
Yes.
And because I do think that the SAG Awards are an interesting predictor for the Oscars. I mean, they heaped a lot of praise on Moonlight last year.
Yeah.
They were somebody that kind of saw that coming.
And famously, the Academy is, the actors branch of the Academy is like 2/3 to 3/4 of the membership. So the sound effects editors can do whatever they like, but if the actors are opposed.
Yeah.
So that is the interesting thing about this award show season is that we've had huge shit going on in entertainment. Very touchy stuff. And we have almost universally male hosts for these shows, as we have had always. And who was
although
it?
Not the SAG Awards, that one's Kristen Bell.
Yes. I mean, the SAG Awards were the like only people who read the room and said, like, let's. And also, Kristen Bell, there's going to be less of an obligation on her to come out with like
to come at it hard,
a hard hitting like monologue. Who hosted something just almost immediately? Oh, it was James Corden hosted something immediately after
Grammys.
What?
He hosted the Grammys.
No, but I'm talking about just a couple of months ago after Weinstein, he hosted something.
Oh,
and he had like sharp jokes written by his writers that were completely tone deaf and sort of shaming to like victims.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were Seth Meyers, how would you, what would your strategy be right now?
He's going to go at it hard. It's his brand.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since he gave Trump that absolute dressing down at the correspondence dinner, he earned a name as being the guy that'll go after some fresh blood like that.
And also, unlike Corden, he's somebody who's doing 10 to 15 jokes a night on his own show.
Yeah.
So he'll have had some focus groups let him know where's too far, what's not far enough.
I think we definitely need, like, they don't have to be male, but we definitely need, like, American perspectives. Like, this is a year more than ever where I don't want a Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
We already know that we're, like, the laughing stock of the entire world. So I need somebody who's, like, local and who gets it and who gets the room. And I think Seth Meyers is, like, the best person for that.
But don't we all wish Tina and Amy could be?
I do, but I don't really care about them anymore.
But they seem pretty defanged the last time they hosted the Globes, actually. Yeah.
And I think he was one of the writers for their whole shtick, anyway.
And I feel like, actually, Seth Meyers has been emerging as the kind of political voice of late night, as you were sort of saying, Margaret.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that he's ready to assume that mantle. He's already run all over Jimmy Fallon, who's just, like, relentlessly mugs. Yeah, who relentlessly mugs for everything. Yeah.
Don't want that again.
Yeah. Wrong.
There was also scrutiny at the Globes because no women were nominated for Best Director. And it's an interesting, it's one of those interesting questions about times are changing, because in the not too distant past, women just didn't get nominated for Best Director, and there had only, like,
because there's like 3% of them out of the whole industry anyway.
Right.
And it's like a chicken or egg scenario where it's like you can't nominate if they're not there.
And it would be easy in many years to be like, well, who did you expect them to direct, to nominate, except for the fact that, like, Greta Gerwig nominated a movie that no one's given a bad review to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Barbara Streisand is always consistently complaining about never getting nominated for any of her films.
Yes.
Right? And she's often the loudest voice about that because she's had high-profile Oscar bait films that have been nominated for a lot of other categories. But and particularly this year, when you have somebody, I mean, you know, action directors don't tend to be nominated usually, but Patty Jenkins really, you know, I think had she had the biggest hit of the year.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's something to consider. And everybody has Dunkirk on their year end best list.
I'm just like,
I really can't.
Is that interesting? Problem, because, like, usually the films that women direct don't get nominated because they are too small or personal. And now we're in the situation where you have somebody directing a technical masterpiece, but because it is about superheroes fighting with each other, that gets ignored.
You know, the thing about Patty Jenkins, too, that I keep thinking about is how she fought for that scene in the movie where she's running over the trenches, which is the best scene of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's, like, to me, exactly what a director is and should do. Not to mention her passion for the piece over many, many years.
Wait, who was saying that they shouldn't? Why was the studio fighting against that?
They thought it just was too long and they
unnecessary.
Wanted to cut.
Really?
Yeah. And she kept fighting for
That's like the moment I started sobbing in the middle of the theater.
Winter, there are some people listening to our show who do not think about the HFPA.
I love this when you annually ask me how to explain
to explain these ridiculous people to America.
Oh, I love it. The HFPA consists of foreign journalists.
The Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
And it's mostly foreign press. Mm-hmm.
It's like 87 people.
Yes, who are all
all like Italian guys named Bertolini or something.
Yeah, and they're all about 87 years old. And they have high influence. You have to kiss their ass all year. And if you do a good enough job of it, you know, they'll nominate your movie. This explains the Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp movie.
Tourist.
This will explain The Tourist, that Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp vehicle that made absolutely no sense to anyone else in this country, but somehow wooed these people.
They want famous people to come to their party.
Yep.
And if when you had them to a screening, you provided them with a substantial lunch.
Yes.
Roast beef.
Or you might fly them, possibly a seared tuna, but you will definitely fly them to a junket. You will let them sit with Ben Affleck longer than he feels comfortable with. with.
Yeah.
And
it's like the IOC,
yeah,
the Olympic Committee.
It's basically the IOC or the guy who was set, the guy who was running the FIFA. It's basically that.
I love that we have a shit show to start things off with.
Yes.
A, it makes for a bigger, splashier party.
Yep.
We all love that everyone gets drunk. I love that they do very self-congratulatory shit with their television awards.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
they really are always saying, who's going to be the princess this year? That America Ferrera back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel Bloom.
Yeah.
I always forget which one is her real name and which one is her TV name.
I think it also tells us an interesting thing about what the perception is of America from abroad.
Uh-huh.
Picking the Angelina Jolie movie, for instance, it's like they're still in love with that fairy tale of what the American
superstar actress is. That was a drive-through fucking movie. That, they drove through, somebody handed them a script, and when they went to the second counter, they handed them back the movie.
Yeah. But I also feel like they didn't, like, the fact that they nominated Get Out as a comedy, right? There's just this sort of, like, screwed up
mm-hmm.
sense that mm-hmm. they have of how movies are perceived and what movies are here versus out yeah. in the rest of the world.
The Globes is very attached to this anachronistic structure of drama or musical or comedy. And
right.
they are always grasping for that thing that is going to be their winner in musical or comedy. Like, what's the... And, like, in a La La Land year, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's crazy. And there are cool things that happen. Jamie Lee Curtis getting to win a Golden Globe for True Lies is a thing that makes me so happy. And I feel like we don't get enough of that actual... And, like, in this year, when we have somebody, Tiffany Haddish, who really should be talked about for awards... They don't make that separation in supporting actor.
Yeah.
So she has to go up against every veteran actress playing everyone's mom.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I don't know where they could have appropriately nominated Get Out. In a way, I feel like it's a genreless hash of a movie in a great way. Like in a very.
But see, I feel like it's a satire. So I know people were like upset about it, but it's a satire. I mean, it fits.
It's like, a darkly comic.
Wasn't
horror,
the Stepford Wives a satire? That's what it was positioned as. Like, it wasn't a sex romp, but it was a satire.
I don't think anyone was actually annoyed by it being nominated as a comedy. I think that someone's publicist did their fucking job.
Exactly.
And no one talks about how I, Tonya is in the musical or comedy.
Is it nominated?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
It's best motion picture, musical, or comedy. I don't know that I would categorize I, Tonya as a comedy.
No.
At all, or,
a
dramedy,
for sure.
So, yeah. I mean,
but it is also almost a musical.
Yeah. I mean, so, but yeah, like, you know, parsing out what, you know, these mixed genre presentations, right is very difficult.
Challenge.
It's always a challenge, and I don't think that there's really a substantial reason to, I mean, you know, exactly, as you were saying, publicists have done their jobs and figured out how best to secure a nomination.
And also how best to keep a movie that came out 8 months ago on our minds by creating mm-hmm. scandals.
Right.
Which you have to do. You have to maintain relevance. There is nothing more fun than watching these movies slide in as awards bait and then just completely fall off because they don't get their hooks into anything. And it's wonderful watching the post come in at the last possible moment, not going into wide release until mid-January, mm-hmm. because it understands very much that it is essentially a featureless awards ball.
Yeah.
Do you feel like such hack awards bait things as Meryl Streep and what's his name from Bosom Buddies?
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks. And Steven Spielberg. Like, do you think that they are something that will be relevant this year, or do you feel like there is too much interesting stuff going on from new players?
I like the nostalgia factor of the Disaster Artist in I, Tonya, because it's becoming, that's like something that's going to be classic for us because we lived through it.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, the post, we're in such a, just a maelstrom of like news and fake news and what's real and what's not. Like that would just make me anxious.
Yeah.
I don't care who the fuck's in it.
The post to me feels like it's riding a little bit on Spotlight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like Spotlight had an interesting, fresh feeling to it that mm-hmm. the post doesn't. And I haven't seen the movie yet. It may be spectacular. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But
it's 85% of what you think it is.
You've seen, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very traditional in a way that's not too exciting. But it also freaks me out because I feel like the more of these movies that come out that are requiems for the press,
yeah,
it makes me sad. Like, yeah, we wouldn't be having these movies come out unless we thought that this sacred thing was dying.
Right.
Well, the other thing, I mean, the Post spends a lot of time showing you print media and expecting you to get excited about the machines running. but also, how much that movie is about, wants to let you know that it is about a woman learning how to make decisions and be in charge is really interesting, because the mechanics of the film are not so much saying, like, the mechanics of the film are working subtly. But then Katharine Graham, on two separate occasions, walks through seas of younger women looking at her, like, excited that she has power.
I will give that movie credit for it being centered around a woman publisher.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, Katharine Graham is a legend. And as somebody who, like, what, inherited the paper from her husband, basically,
yeah,
no one expected her to succeed in that position. So that is an element of the story that I think is pretty cool.
And I didn't expect it, and I was a little proud of Steven Spielberg for being like, well, yes, this is a story that we need to tell. Like, I kind of assumed that he would make it Tom Hanks's movie because he's Steven Spielberg. Going into this award season, who will be the prince or princess?
Margot Robbie.
Why?
Margot Robbie, in my opinion, in the short time that she's been around, she's proven to be somebody who can take on a role and make it her own and still give, like, a singular performance.
You also, I think, are using a different definition of prince or princess of Academy, of award season, but one that I really like. because Margot Robbie is going to be the person who is tromping up and down,
yeah,
every fucking red carpet,
yeah,
saying,
she's going to look stellar on the red carpet.
She's going to look beautiful, and she's going to be saying, I deserve to be here.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that, like, Sharon Stone, when she had fucking Casino, she was in everyone's goddamn face saying, I am a queen just like the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret, who do you think will be the prince or princess of this award season?
I mean, I do think Greta Gerwig is a critical darling right,
yeah,
now, and I think she's going to get some kind of attention for Lady Bird. There's no way.
Well, and it's interesting that you have somebody.
But I just don't know which of the awards. Do you know what I mean?
But, yes.
Screenplay, I think she has got a good crack at.
That's the thing. Is they're going to give her, like, the consolation screenplay,
yeah,
award?
I'd rather
and never
have that
consider
than
her for the, no, for the directing.
Oh, right.
Directing.
Right.
And it's, but it's nice having, like, a camera-trained actress be one of the directors, so you have someone exciting to look at. My question is, are you going to enjoy watching Greta Gerwig wince and be self-conscious before putting her hands in for the manicure cam on E? Like,
yes, because it'll be hilarious.
The thing is, I think it'll be charming, but I like a nice diva as well.
But can we talk about...
She's like... Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say, she's like diva light.
Yes.
You know? She's diva fluff.
I just think it's interesting. I'm looking at the nominations here on my phone, and the best actress limited series or television movie are mostly film actresses.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Jessica Lange, Susan Sarandon, and Jessica... I don't know
why Jessica Biel's on here.
That's going to be hard. I know.
What is Jessica Biel doing on there?
It's the Golden Globes. They want famous people to come, and her...
I mean, I get it. She's radiantly beautiful, blah, blah, blah.
And her husband
is
noteworthy.
What is Jessica Biel doing on there?
Prince and Princess... Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet.
Okay.
I will just put it out there for them, because I think that they're going to win people over by being just so young and charming and talented and showing up. I'm not sure that they'll actually win the awards. I mean, maybe Saoirse Ronan has a shot, but usually coming of age films don't have that same kind of impact.
Well, there is the dynamic of women win young and men win old.
Yeah.
He would be the
and
youngest.
She's been in a couple of things now
Not her first time at the rodeo.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like Brooklyn.
Like,
and
absolutely.
Atonement. Like, she had to show up as, like, a pre-adolescent girl. The thing is, I didn't think about it until now, but I think Saoirse Ronan is going to win the dress game hard.
Yeah.
Because this is not her first time at the rodeo. She knows what she's doing,
yeah,
and she's, like, legitimately very young. And I think it will be wonderful to see what she does at the Globes. Will it be a jumpsuit? In what way?
Oh, I think Greta's going to do a jumpsuit.
Oh,
or
yes.
Like a tuxedo.
Yes.
Like a lady,
yeah,
tuxedo.
Well, that, you know, everybody's wearing black. All the women are wearing,
right,
black.
Oh, we need to talk about that,
yeah,
too.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Yeah. So what do we think?
First, let me call a princess.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
It's just Laurie Metcalf is going to have so much hardware hanging off of her hands come March. And I just feel like it's going to make everyone happy, because we fucking love her. She's fucking Aunt Jackie.
Against and Frances McDormand?
No. She's supporting.
Oh.
She's supporting. Yeah. She just has to take down Holly Hunter.
But she also has to take down Allison Janney.
Yes, who had a showier role. But I'm going to say, look, we all fucking love Allison Janney. But Laurie Metcalf has a Tony. And, like, we understand that, like, there's something classy about that, where, as Kate Berlant so famously said, Allison Janney in I, Tonya is a triumph of cigarette acting. Yeah. Like, it really is. It's a bit broad. Margaret, you were talking about women wearing black to the Golden Globes.
Well, yeah, I wanted to get the read in the room here about whether the wearing all black as a sort of sign of the Me Too era and a recognition that the industry needs to change is a valuable protest, or if it's a little bit just surfacey and not very meaningful.
It feels a little surfacey. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never been a fan of the ribbon movement or these, like what pin something on the lapel or the dress. And I think that, I mean, who knows? Maybe it will create a much more dramatic impact because you can't see a ribbon, like, you know, across a huge room. But if you, but the thing is, dudes are mostly going to be wearing black anyway. I don't know if it's just going to wash itself out.
No, I think there's something bold and awesome about saying we will not be your plumage anymore. If you take, like when you, a panning shot is no longer going to be like sparkles and rainbows. Like if it's going to be severe, and I think people will still have interesting stuff going on. But I also think that saying like there is an aspect of this game that you like, we're not going to do that for you if you don't take us seriously, is really interesting and compelling. And I feel sorry for that bitch in pink. Like, I just feel like...
I was just going to say, who's going to not wear black?
Yes. Yeah, who's not going to get the memo?
Some wives. Like, I feel like some industry wives are not going to even be...
And some young things that are still being told by their publicists not to make a big stand or whatever.
But you're just like, I've got those two good dresses that I have. I have to wear one of those.
I just feel like there's... too many people still unnamed, still involved, still waiting by the phone to know that they're getting a call from their publicist or attorney saying somebody's coming up with some shit or has a valid assault charge or whatever.
You guys at home need to know that before we record Pop Rocket, we are all only just talking about who we think the next articles are going to be about.
Seriously, like I it always reminds me of like Sandra Bullock winning her Oscar and having like 1 week of pure, like, the world is yours. Anything can happen. I love my man. Boom, boom. And then like, boom. Next issue, cheating and
Jesse
carrying
James.
On and a Nazi sympathizer. It's like you
love Joan Crawford too much not to love the magnificence of having your highest moment be deeply undercut either by what some fucking man is doing to you.
It's the only way to be a diva.
The only way to be a diva. But I just think like this movement is taking on the importance of it. And to me, I'm really proud of how it's gone from it's more than a hashtag.
Yeah.
And I posted about this on Facebook, like the LA Times, year in issue was so emotional because when you get to that part, it's like they didn't hold back. Like they're like literally like, this is who you are. They got everybody up in there by name, photo, and what their accusers have said about them. And it's like this. You know, I appreciate the Oscar So White campaign, but I appreciate it for myself, and I appreciate it for, people of color and African Americans. But this is like so much deeper than that, because the idea of a casting couch situation has been happening so long that it became, what's the word when something just becomes normal?
Status quo.
Yeah.
Let's
become attenuated to it, or like
I don't use words that big. Come on, I'm not a college grad, and I'm barely a high school graduate. I just feel like there is something to be said about carrying a movement from Twitter and then having it become this groundswell to the point where it reaches a national telecast, like this, an international telecast. And I'm just hoping that people adhere to it and really be like, no fucks given.
Well, and also going from a world where so much, like 15 years ago, women wanted to let you know that they were the cool one who wasn't going to be difficult like that.
Yeah.
And having people say collectively, like, no, we are all going to be difficult mm-hmm. like that is wonderful, because these are actresses. Like, these are human beings who are built to be amenable because they have had to live in that world. And
all women are built to be amenable.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to say that I think it's all in the execution. Mm. You know, if they wear these outfits and then don't say anything when they accept awards, that's going to be a completely empty
total letdown.
Yeah. Yeah, like that you've got to deliver in the actual speeches and not just do it in a little tap the point and then leave it alone. Like, really get in there and brawl with this
shit. Like when Casey Affleck gives you your shit, snatch that shit and then ask him to get out of your shot.
The wonderful situation of, like, whether people accepting their awards are just adorable and I don't know what to say, or take seriously what they're having to do. And there have been times when I was, like, deeply disappointed by somebody not having the guts to, like, make a moment and use a moment. And I feel like I never thought about that, but everyone being in black really does raise the stakes that, like, Saoirse Ronan or Greta Gerwig or whoever really needs to have something to say.
Yeah, which is what I think Rose McGowan was getting at. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, granted, I have complete respect for Rose McGowan. I'm glad that there is somebody pushing back in that way and critiquing certain stances that are happening out in Hollywood. But at the same time, I feel like, let people protest the way they want to protest. Mm-hmm. And you don't own this. This is bigger than you or any individual. This is huge. So let's just see how this plays out. And I mean,
this has affected the industry, not just even from we don't need to hire him anymore, or he's out. He's not involved.
It's stripping out the gatekeepers.
It's stripping out
the biggest gatekeepers is dead now.
Yeah.
And on top of that, by killing him, it's exposed the people that were also protecting him, and they've had to change. I mean, I can't tell you how many people that work at different agencies and management companies tell me that. I mean, this is only a first world problem and only in an LA complaint, but like, how they had no Christmas parties, or how everything was relegated to, like, manicure coupons and VIP massage things at whatever else by a massage therapist.
No swag bags,
no dinners at Spago. And I'm like, you do realize, like, we work in a rarefied space, and that the space that we work in, it lends itself to all kinds of things, good and bad. But just because you didn't have a Christmas party this year because your boss got fired, your main source of income got exposed, you know, there are bigger problems in the world. We're exposing something that's been going on for 100 years.
So, Winter.
100 years. This industry is 100 years old.
That we are problematizing the, like, support behavior that has to go on for these people, and everyone's having to reevaluate the way that they support behavior is really interesting, and it will be fascinating to see how we evolve as an industry. All right, what?
Although I will say, I mean, I know the Governor's Awards aren't like a huge test case for any of these things, but apparently, you know, Dustin Hoffman, recently accused, was there, like, just soaking it all up, and everybody was all on Dustin's side, and there didn't seem to be any, you know.
Dustin's a tough one,
Tough one. He's a real tough one. I mean, it's not like, you know, Kevin Spacey just showed up uninvited or anything like that. But I think that, I do feel like, I wonder, like, you know, once forced into the same shared space, whether there's going to be that same level of
the thing is,
comeuppance.
In award shows, you're built to say the thing that gets the entire room going. And I feel like if somebody does, like, call out a Dustin Hoffman or something, even if Kevin Spacey were there and somebody, like, talked some shit, I feel like a third of the room at the Globes or the Academy Awards would, like, not feel comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And, I'm really excited for tension.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in a way, I want somebody who it's not their brand to protest this kind of thing. Like, we know Jessica Chastain's going to say something. We know, like, Brie Larson is going to do something. Like, those people are going to are going to show up. But I want the, like, you know, I don't know. Who would it be that would say something that would be
Jessica Biel.
Yes. Like, somebody somebody like that who just
I'm
really
not
going to
wake
it.
Up on Monday and be like, wow, I did not know Jessica Biel was so woke.
She raises one of her toned arms.
Yeah,
says,
listen, guys.
No more.
She has a stylus, too, so let's show some respect.
All right, that's very fair.
I just don't think that they can get away with, look, if I were in a room full of people and say we've been working together for 10 years, 15 years, whatever, and then they started, God forbid, somebody starts talking shit and on national television about you, like, I'd be super upset no matter what the situation is. Well, but do I want to be there? I have to be there. So I can't even imagine. The pressure of winning to me right now is, I know it's not top of their mind. They're like, how can I get out of this night unscathed, not captured by a fair cam, not drunk and feeling somebody up? How am I gonna? It's like a video game. I want a video. I want a award season video
That's
game.
So funny.
Navigating like, oh, here comes a thought.
But it's Jodie Foster defending Mel Gibson, but 600 people. You know,
but Mel Gibson, like that was shocking. But like now, compared to everything else that's happened, like I would have preferred.
It almost feels quaint. A
litany
a bit.
Of sugar tits versus like I came in a plant and the bottom of Bobo. Like I just
and
want,
I had a whole system
and I had a whole
crushing young actresses.
Yeah,
you guys. This is all good and meaningful, but we do have to talk about something ridiculous briefly before we go to break. How do you feel about the Grammys being nestled in the middle of all of this? Is it the stupidest thing Los Angeles has ever done?
I don't understand.
We need to give it back to New York.
Last year, it was
New York.
It was in February, and now it's in January, the last week of January.
Wait, what?
It is. It's the 28th.
So damn confusing.
So I just, you know, I like award shows less when I don't have to go to them. But I feel like the Grammys, the problem with the recording industry is that there are so many things that make the recording industry problematic. One, they don't really make money anymore. Uh-huh. Two, that they have all the problematic situations with how they deal with hip hop and rap as genres and including them in the broadcast, taking them out of the broadcast. I just think that the Grammys doesn't really know what it is. And sometimes I don't think they're on the pulse of things.
They're definitely not on
definitely
the pulse.
Not. Yeah.
They have a best liner notes category.
Which,
hey,
I mean,
wait a minute. Boys my kind.
I would rather see that award being given out than some of the ones that they put on the broadcast.
Yeah. I just start writing and writing.
But Margaret, the Grammys, like, do you enjoy it?
No.
How many times have we complained about the Grammys on this show?
A lot. And as a person who covered music at the LA Times for 6-7 years, every year that the Grammys came around, I felt a pit in my stomach of like, oh no. Because it's not in step with anything going on in music. And it's true that now music is defined. I mean, people make money by touring.
Yeah.
And it's not really about like record sales anymore. Yeah. It's all streaming and touring. And that's just a kind of ephemera that like a award show does not know how to capture.
I feel like the shitty music award shows have done a lot better job of just providing us with good performances. The VMAs are always a story, and the
VMAs has a personality. I mean, I think Winter's totally right that the Grammys is so scattershot and so identityless that it just doesn't make a mark.
Listening has been so atomized that there is really very little national culture around what we like to hear, except for very, very few artists. And those people aren't usually nominated for Grammys or don't often succeed at the Grammys.
But having a moment when children have to explain to their parents who Shawn Mendes is, I feel like is good for America.
Well, I mean, give me another like Ricky Martin, like busting out of his, you know.
Or another lesbian kiss or something.
Or something, yeah. You know, it's time to find those moments.
I do really like, as somebody who cares about fashion, I really do like that everyone at the Grammys is taking a fucking risk and wearing something stupid.
I do like that. I actually really do appreciate it.
All right. You are listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back after this.
SF Sketchfest is just around the corner, January 11th to 28th, and there will be plenty of Max Fun shows there to represent. We're bringing Judge John Hodgman on the 11th, Jordan Jesse Go with special guest Andy Richter on the 12th, Smanners on the 14th. We Got This with Mark and Howe also on the 14th, The Greatest Generation and Friendly Fire Podcast Super Show on the 17th. Pop Rocket host Guy Branum's talk show The Game Show on the 19th, and One Bad Mother on the 21st. You can learn more about these shows and get tickets at MaximumFun.org/SFSketchFest18. Get your tickets now.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what is your current jam? Karen Tongson, PhD, what is your current jam?
Well, apropos my honorific title that I earned. Anyway, I let my friend sort of guide my listening this weekend, and I happened upon a new band, which is really a solo project by a recent graduate of Bryn Mawr, where my friend Home King teaches, and this girl was one of her students, Michelle Zauner, and she is Japanese Breakfast. Let's listen to the song Machinist.
Oh, I like them.
I mean, I love the stellar use of saxophone.
Yeah.
It's creamy. It's so creamy.
It's exactly. Like, you know, we lost the saxophone for many decades. And I think that they've brought it back.
And you're a saxophonist American, right?
I am a saxophonist, yes. This is from their album Soft Sounds from Another Planet, which came out in July 2017. I say there because there's a rotating cast of supporting musicians. Michelle Zauner, I believe, is still based in Philadelphia. Japanese Breakfast is her most recent project. She has basically a lot. She's the kind of songwriter, singer, conceiver of all things of this project. And I love the name of the band, too, which is sort of supposed to be a mix of Asian exoticism and American culture.
Because we own breakfast.
Because we totes own breakfast.
Margaret Wappler, what is your current jam?
Well, over the holidays, I saw Phantom Thread, which is the new movie from P.T. Anderson. And at first glance, I wasn't digging this movie too much. It has Daniel Day-Lewis in it playing Reynolds Woodcock, who is a courtier in 50s London. And it is about as uptight and pinned up as you can imagine. And it's also, it seemingly in the beginning seems enthralled with male genius, like a kind of tormented male genius. And I thought, oh my God, could there be a movie that's completely out of step with what we want to see, right? But then it makes a total twist. And the things that happen in the movie are very surprising and a bit demented and really show delicious power dynamics between Daniel Day-Lewis and his strong-willed wife, who's played by Vicky Krieps. Also, I want to just give a shout out to his sister, Cyril,
played Leslie Manville.
Yes, Leslie Manville. And she is terrifying. Like, I kind of want this woman to stand over me, and anytime I have a deadline in my life, just to look at me and simply say, "Are you finished?" She's just so frosty. It's amazing. But one of the standout qualities of this movie is the soundtrack. And the soundtrack is from, or the score, I should really say, is from Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead. And at this point, I'm almost enjoying Johnny Greenwood's scores to things more than I care about Radiohead. I know that you're going to delight in that guy. So this is the main piece of the movie. It's a track called House of Woodcock, and it is sumptuous and romantic and beautiful. I mean, are you with me?
Yeah.
Like, is this like being wrapped in velvet and like sipping Earl Grey tea?
Do you brush your hair to this at night?
I should. Exactly.
With a long,
50
like,
brushes.
Fur, like, 49. Gown. And do you hold it with your hand and then announce yourself to your husband?
I sure do.
David, I'm home.
Winter Mitchell, what is your jam?
Wait, I just need to say that this is going to come out January 12th.
My song is Happy New Year by ABBA. I just feel like this song, for whoever it was intended for, it probably isn't intended for Have a Happy New Year, but it just felt right. I feel like really optimistic about this year. I feel like, you know, like when you're in a family and it's problematic and then everybody has like a big, huge fight and then they start throwing food and they laugh about it.
Yes.
That's how I feel like the end of 2017 was. Like, it was a shit show. We got through it, though.
Yes.
So we should be triumphant. And this, to me, is just sort of like, I love the upbeat of it, even though the lyrics are kind of like, it's, you know, ominous, but I love it.
Giving love to Deep Cut ABBA.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of my goals this year is to really stick hard to like what I'm all about. Sometimes I try to give people like new stuff because I don't want to lean too much on nostalgia, but we need to start appreciating what's been given to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
Yeah.
On that note, recently a friend of mine, friend of the podcast, Chris Schleicher, tweeted, did you know that? And then he said the name of a beloved pop song from 20 years ago was a cover. I was stunned. I was overwhelmed. I had no idea. We're going to play it. Do any of you know what I'm talking about right now? All right, let's see.
You said 20 years ago?
20 years ago. If you guys can identify, it was originally done in the 60s and was redone in the 90s. Let's hear it.
Zephyr in the sky at night, I wonder, do your tears of morning sink beneath the sun?
If you guys could only be watching Margaret's eyes right now.
I know, I'm like really trying to figure this out.
I know it, I already know it.
Like, this is the original?
This is the original.
It's Ray of Light.
Yeah.
Ray of Light is a cover.
Like I just
yeah.
But who is this originally?
I forgot to write it down. It's something Curtis.
Curtis Muldoon.
It's Curtis Muldoon, who is a British guy.
Okay, it sounds like the Birds a bit to me. That's what I was hearing a little bit.
It's like 60s guitar-y, and apparently some producer just like loved it as a song and like had an like imagination. And I just cannot believe that like the official song of Madonna's Hindu Cowboy Season is a cover. I always just thought like you know, that was Lourdes in the video for the first time. Like, it just feels like such a Madonna song, and so now I've been listening to 60s rock and I'm not proud of myself.
This is very off brand, guy. I don't know what to do. I mean, it's 2018, anything goes.
All right. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Karen Tongson. You want to know what? Let's never forget that that Margaret Wappler's novel, Neon Green, is very, very good, and you could pick it up on Amazon or some sort of independent bookstore that she would support.
Or your comedy album, for that matter. Get on it, people.
Thank you. Look, if we keep going, we're going to have to start plugging somebody's academic texts. Not all of us write 4 books a year. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Izzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to that other Margaret over there.
Hello.
Dictator Hannah. A Franklin Witt. Derek. Oh, you guys, I'm sorry. Izzy Mizo was in the credits of Baby Driver, and that made me excited.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now I might go watch it.
Don't go that far.
All right. A Franklin Witt. Derek at the Oregon Coast. Derek at the Oregon Coast, okay. The Two Dems, Amelia 940, and Lotus Girl 67 for the 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. What riches for the end of the year, you guys.
Everyone wants Margaret to stay healthy.
Exactly. You guys are giving me super calcium.
If you haven't already, please review us. And Lotus Girl 67 says, Karen is my gay hero.
Hi, girl.
Mine, too.
All of our gay heroes.
Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producer is the quick Christian Duenas.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.